Hey guys, here it's Wade for the podcast. Exciting podcast this week. We've got Eric McElroy all the way from Seattle, and we've got Chelsea Hart all the way from Alaska. We are going to be talking all things Trump. How's the State of the Union doing? What's going on with that CNN wrestling video? Trump versus the press, Mika and Morning Joe. What's going on with that? Russia Today. What's Trump going to do when he gets into this whole conference with Russia in the G20? And Trump in the UK, is he going to come here? And are people going to protest? And should they? Make sure you like the podcast, share it, review it. Hey, do anything you can with the podcast. Enjoy. This is going to be a good one. All right. It is another podcast. It is a lovely to have some special guests here. A new guest and an old guest. And I don't mean that because you're fucking old.
Yes.
Eric McElroy joining. You're from America. Whereabouts in America are you from again?
Seattle.
Yeah, yes. West Coast.
The home of Trumpism and the right wing. And
what?
The eastern part of the state is. If you cross over the Cascade Mountains, you are in Hicksville.
No, I've never met anyone from Washington who wasn't like completely Northwest stereotype.
Well, because the people in eastern Washington don't believe. Leaving America. It's like going into Oklahoma. It is very conservative.
Well, I guess you are, what is it, by Wyoming?
Washington State?
Northwest. What's the state next to Washington?
Idaho.
That's a bit country bumpkin, isn't it?
Yeah.
So you cross over. Chelsea Hart is also here. You're West Coast American. You don't know what the states that surround?
I've never been to Idaho.
No?
No.
So I don't
You're
remember.
From Alaska.
Yeah, I'm from Alaska.
That's okay. Proper. That is beyond
that
West Coast.
That's like America.
That's nearly Russia.
That's
what
like America.
It is old
that,
Russia.
Actually, it reaches so far west, it crosses the international date line, goes into Asia.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. A small portion of America is actually Asia.
So you're Asian. So you can
my mom's from Michigan.
No, but you could put that on like scholarship applications if you ever want to go back to university or something. Just think about that. You could cash in.
Could be a minority.
So Chelsea, welcome to the show. You're from America. How long has it been since you lived there?
3 years.
3 years?
Yeah.
And were you living from Alaska all the way to London?
No. So I moved from Alaska to Kent originally.
Okay.
Living the dream. Folkestone, Kent. It was really weird.
Folkestone's a beautiful area.
Yeah.
Yeah, but why was there...
There's a delay.
Yeah,
there.
Okay.
No, because I did that. When I first moved to Europe, I
we
moved
don't know
to a
better,
place,
do we? We're well, just moved, like, England. Yeah. La, 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 la.
I moved to a town in Germany called Schwäbisch Gmünd.
Oh, my God.
Which is outside Stuttgart.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
it
yeah.
would be like moving halfway across the world and moving to, I don't know what the equivalent would be in America anymore, Detroit. Or, I mean, just a proper shithole. And it was terrible. So I would imagine that's how you felt when you woke up in Folkestone. Because, it's all right. It's quaint.
Well, I didn't know any better. So, like, the thing is, like, Kent's kind of a special type of English. Like, it's, like, hyper-English. Because, like, there's, like, I get on with my English. I've gotten used to the way people are here. They're weird, right? It's, like, they treat self-expression like it's this new thing. Just like, I'm going to say a thing. I'm going to speak my mind. You better listen up. You know what I mean? It's just like, no, you should just do that all the time. You should just say how you feel like a normal goddamn human being.
So saying how you feel. How do you feel then when you moved here 3 years, you left Obama, and you've got Trump now. How does it feel for the state of the world?
Obama's not an amazing human being either. He's very charismatic and a fantastic speechwriter, but he was at war with 9 countries by the time he was out of office. That's
the man of drones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think there was, at one point in his presidency, there was a joint strike every 20 minutes. I mean, and he's the cool president, so suddenly he gets away with it.
Well, he wasn't doing it personally. The robots were doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, but he was the commander-in-chief of the U.S. military, so everything is his fault.
There was some overcompensation because he is a Democrat and we're traditionally considered to be soft on military type things.
Yeah.
And so he wanted to make sure that he came in hard, but then without having any Americans killed. So the drones are like
perfect.
Yeah,
and his image was perfectly preserved. I mean, he's a great speechwriter. His social kind of stances are very inspiring, but he's still bowing to Saudi Arabia and the Middle East.
As long as the money is there for contracts
well,
and your bow.
That's back to Sykes-Picot. That's the whole reason Saudi Arabia exists, was for the oil. And the formation of the Saudi Arabian Peninsula, as we see it, was for that reason. They gave it to a madman called Abdulaziz ibn Saud, hence Saud's Arabia.
Mm-hmm.
Bada bing, bada boo, we got this. Like, they've literally had... No, they've had the West...
You're saying that America does things for oil?
Well, actually, that was Britain. That was Britain that did that. Sykes-Picot was a British and
French
British,
thing. British and American, British companies, obviously, British Petroleum, a lot of oil companies. It's pan-global, we'll say.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about Trump, though, so far?
I had this theory the other day. I was trying to explain him to someone, and I had this theory that he's a bit like, you know, Danny Zuko from Grease.
Mm-hmm.
Like Danny and Dan, what's her name? God, Olivia Newton-John.
Yeah. And John Travolta.
Yeah, yeah, so like they're out on the beach just like, da, 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 and they're being all cute and lovely and everything. I mean, obviously we know like Trump is a sexual predator, but like I want to think at like at one point in his life, he might have been a reasonable human being. I don't know if like power corrupted him or something. You know, like
okay,
like maybe he got like maybe.
So he's a crazy sexual predator. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think that. Okay. But like, I think I don't know if he actually believes half of the politics that he's spewing out. That he's just like, here's Danny Zuko being Danny Zuko, and then Danny Zuko in front of the guy is just like, wee! You know, like it's suddenly he's in front of people and he's just like, actually, I'm gonna say a really racist thing. Like, he has no idea what he's talking about.
Eric, following up on that.
I think why he works is because he does believe, and I've come. I mean,
does
I
he used, believe in it?
I, well, there's he got sued, or no, he sued someone for libel. The guy wrote a
as
book about how much Trump was worth. So Trump sued him, and then had to be deposed under oath.
Yeah.
And under oath, they said, "So, all right, you're saying that this guy says you're not worth as much as you say you are. How do you come to the amount that you're worth?" And he goes, "Well, it just depends on what I feel on the day."
What?
So he establishes his net worth based on what he believes. So that's like waking up and going, I feel like $1 million. I'm going to go get a mortgage.
But that was the thing also when he's done talk shows and like Saturday Night Live, his caveat that he put in was you can make fun of my hair, you can make fun of the relationship I have with my daughter, yeah. You cannot question how much money I have.
Yeah.
You can't make fun of that. So that's his bugbear, his
but
insecurity.
I think that strength, that's why he has been so convincing to so many people who feel that he speaks like them, because he genuinely believes what he's saying in the moment that he says it. Now, that doesn't mean he's going to change his belief, whether that's a psychological thing or a genius thing or whatever it is. Whereas when you look at a traditional politician like a Hillary or someone else, you can kind of tell when they're talking shit.
And
when
they don't like Hillary really Clinton fighting against gay marriage for years and years and years, and then suddenly she's up against Obama and she's like, I love gay people.
So you're saying politicians change their opinion?
What? I don't think it's wrong for them to change, actually. I think Hillary evolved into that, just as the nation evolved towards a more open attitude towards gay marriage. I think it's okay sometimes for politicians to evolve. So, yes, she changed in her view. Mm. So did Obama. So did all of, you know, the majority of America evolved over the last 20 years.
So when Trump said he was going to go after China, and now he's saying, we're good. We'll work this out. So that's just a regular politician then, right?
Well, yeah, he is a regular politician. The whole idea that he isn't is just because he somehow can get away with saying things that other politicians can't, because I do think he actually believes it. And I think it's I don't know if that's a mental disorder or to be able to do that.
I'm sure he has a mental disorder. There's no doubt.
I think there's probably a good chance of that. But but I think that's what when we question what he believes, I think in that moment he believes it. And that's his genius, is that other people, you can see Hillary doesn't really believe it. She didn't really like when Obama was saying, well, my views on gay marriage evolved. He probably was pro-gay marriage from the beginning. But when he won, even in 2008, he couldn't quite say it yet.
Mm.
So that's why it always seems a bit hollow with a traditional politician.
I think that's the thing about America as well. Is like it's still so steeped in that religious aspect.
Yeah.
Like in Alaska is a perfect example of that. We have churches every 10 feet, like Pretz in Oxford Street. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
And I grew up in that, and it's quite interesting to see the countries evolve so much slower than other parts of Western civilization. Like that is. I mean, even this country has gay marriage completely legal now, doesn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. And still there's countries or states in the states that just like no, 100% not, like women can't get birth. Like there's so many more benefits to birth control than just birth control.
But isn't that what's supposed to make America great, is that each state has its own choice and everyone can make their own choices and they're all part of a big union and everyone can have their own opinion. Some people can have pot, some people can have gay marriage. If you don't like it, you move to another one, but it's all part of the union. Isn't that your selling point?
It keeps it interesting. That's
it
for
keeps
sure.
It interesting, and it functions for such a large country. That's why it kind of works, because this little solar system of a state can look after its own and everything. But it's just like, as a whole, I feel like America on the grand scale is a little bit behind in awareness of social issues and what they represent. Like birth control, for instance, is like not just about birth control. It's just like some women have a thing called endometriosis, which is where part of your uterine lining grows outside your actual uterus. And birth control keeps your hormones down. It controls your actual cycle. And that's a medical reason to have birth control that has nothing to do with birth control in any way. And just because a bunch of old guys in an office say just like, no, she needs to put a pill between her legs, just It's absolutely ridiculous.
And do you have to pay for this birth control? Because is that covered under Obama or the care that you guys now have?
I went to Planned Parenthood for mine.
And is that's now being, is that some of the things that they're looking at shuttering? Or
Yeah. No, that's one, I think one thing once the Republican majority got in is like, that's one thing they've been like, ticking off their list for
years. They're trying to defund. Yeah, I mean, but there are a few, like Senator Collins from wherever New England she's from. There's a few of them that have said, Murkowski from Alaska.
Oh, I love Murkowski. Murkowski's not a typical Republican, though.
Yeah.
Murkowski's very centrist. Like, she's a Republican so that she could fight the fight in Alaska. But I think if she had the freedom to be, like, to be the politician that I think she would identify as a Democrat.
Was Sarah Palin fighting the fight?
Because she's so centrist. Lisa Murkowski's so centrist. Some of her bills and stuff is a bit questionable, but I think she's just voting to obviously kind of just, like, shake hands as she walks along and everything. But I really do think that she's quite centrist, and she signs some of these bills into law to kind of pat the backs of people who support her.
But I love when she got back into office, I think the last time around.
As a write-in.
Yeah, as a write-in, because she got bumped off in the primary, didn't she?
Oh, yeah.
And then they had to write her name in. But she was running ad campaigns teaching people how to spell Murkowski.
Yeah.
I remember seeing the ads.
I was there during that. Is she the first U.S. senator to get voted in by a write-in?
As a write-in, yeah. And then she came back to the Republican. They were, all right, we'll take you back now.
Yeah.
So she's a Republican again.
Well, no, I think some old dog from years past was running against her and just ran a smear campaign. And obviously Alaska's, bless them, they're a bit behind in the gender role department, which is why I have this haircut now and I didn't then. You know what I mean? Yeah. I get this haircut in a small town in Alaska. It's just like, are you a lesbian? Do you know what I mean? So I think there was a smear campaign against her, and she's a woman just like, oh, she can't function quite the same. It's like, oh, bless her. She's, you know what I mean?
But
so I think that's why she lost in the initial fight and then came back and came out fighting a little bit.
So we've got a big week for America.
Yep.
It's your independence. Hooray.
Yeah.
Happy birthday.
Celebration of that. Also, it's a G20 conference coming up in Hamburg this week, which Trump finally gets to meet Putin.
I know.
If they haven't already met. Well, they've gone back and forth. Sometimes he's met him. Sometimes he's never met him before. So you never know, depending on the day, as you said earlier.
It's like one of those male brides meeting for the first time.
That's always a beautiful experience they never capture in Hallmark cards. But we've also, Trump could be coming to England after the whole conference. He's stopping in Poland, too, which is quite of a weird choice to go to Poland first. Particularly with the way the state of Poland is going right now. Poland is pretty much reverting back to its communist ways.
Oh, yeah.
Is Trump doing an okay job? Because, you know, you start looking at people. There's New York Times critic David Booker is like, yeah, there's this whole Russia thing's overblown. There's little evidence. And you know, Obama did nothing against it. Maybe Trump isn't as bad. You got the New York Times softening on him.
Well, there's a couple things. It's the question, did he collude with Russia? And did his campaign? I don't feel like he could have colluded with Russia. He can't.
Well, members of his campaign did.
But the question of collusion, I don't think they thought they were going to win. I thought they were making sure that the money was going to keep flowing because of the money that's coming from places like Deutsche Bank, which are heavily subsidized by the Russian government, and there's loans that are coming through. It was all about padding the future because he just wanted to continue to build up his name and his brand for the future of building Trump. And then they won, and they started to realize, oh, maybe some of this shit we shouldn't have done. And, you know, and I think the pattern of having them, so many of his people connected with Russia is why there's a concern. They weren't hanging out with people from Sweden. They weren't hanging out with people from other pointless countries. You know, it was Russia, which has a big influence. And it was trying, you know, I think, you know, was trying to have an impact on the campaign to delegitimize Hillary. And that's why Obama didn't do anything. Hillary is going to win. She could deal with the mess. She could make sure, shore up Obamacare. Everything's going to be fine. And they dropped the ball.
Yeah.
You know, because if they had come out, it would have. Well, I can see why they held back.
Yeah. Obama did. He took two compounds from the Russians. So obviously he was. And they still haven't given them back, which has pissed the Russians off. They want that. They want those.
Trump tried to give them back, though.
He's trying to give them back now. And I think they should give them back. You know, what does it say for international politics if you're going to take international places from someone and not give them back?
Well, because that's how you penalize people in diplomatic situations.
You penalize them for a little bit, but you give them back after a while. It's been since October.
Well, when they leave Crimea, they can have their compounds.
Wow, so that'll be an interesting thing.
I would imagine the price of those compounds where they are is probably the same price as Crimea. I mean, the property there can't be that valuable.
Didn't Comey testify in front of the Senate that he had no doubt that the Russians had influence in the American election?
Yeah, there's no doubt that they tried to influence.
They tried, but they didn't stick together. It's just trying to find the exact proof. Mm. And I mean, Trump had an okay week of doing some things. He signed the Veterans Affairs bill, which was last week, that basically allowed to find whistleblowers in the VA, which then allows people, because there are a lot of soldiers that are basically not getting treatment. They're not being able to get a lot of the things, and they're not able to complain against the VA, basically saying, I'm being taken advantage of. I can't get it. I've been waiting 6 months or 2 years for a prosthetic leg, and I'm being held up. And they were never able to sort of whistleblow. And now he's on this sort of basic allows them. But to me, the big thing was the executive order on Friday. I don't know if you saw this. He revived the National Space Council, which is awesome, I think, particularly in the time. The one, whatever you say about Trump, he loves space.
He does.
And he believes in going for space. And I'm already fed up with this planet anyway. So that's one thing that hopefully
we'll
get
into. He's going to need it because he's a climate change denier. So he's probably, like, once this planet fries up, like, go to the moon, I guess.
Did you see the press conference, though, where he talked about that and where he was talking about how wonderful space is and where would we be without space? And Buzz Aldrin was standing next to him. And when Trump was talking, his eyebrows just went up like, what the fuck are you saying?
Well, I watched the whole thing, but he was, obviously he's old. He was an old guy, but the whole thing, they did that Infinity on Beyond.
Look at Buzz when you watch it again and watch that man's face where he clearly is going, what are you talking about? Because Trump's riffing on how good space is. And without space, where would we be? And we need space. You're just like, oh, man, old man. Well, listen, old man. Somebody said the word space to you.
I'm going to take you to task on this because I've got the speech right here.
All right, you've got this.
I've got the speech right here. And I've read it.
What he's written word is different than his performance.
No, it's a very well-written speech.
He did not deliver that speech verbatim.
Our travels beyond the Earth propel scientific discoveries that improve our lives in countless ways here, right here at home, powering vast new industry, spurring incredible new technology, and providing the space security we need to protect the American people.
Wrong.
And security is going to be a big factor with respect to space and space exploration. And at some point in the future, we're going to look back and say, how do we do it all without space? Now, space.
How do we do it all without space?
Are you denying space? That space exploration has created countless and boundless new technology?
Yes. How do we do it without space exploration? But not space itself. You can't say we would be doing it all without space. Space is just there. He's taking credit for the universe.
He's taking credit for going to outer space and reviving something that's been dead for 50 years.
The National
Space Council has been gone for 50 years. Hmm. So he's brought it back. In an age where when you go into the moon, we were spending 78% of your GDP to go to the moon, which was an endeavor to basically fight off Russia, but it created the first huge wave of science, leading to a huge propelling of our computer industries.
Don't get me wrong. I'm all for space exploration. I got no problem with that. Plus, he's getting rid of the Council on Women and Girls, so that'll free up the budget.
Send him
for
to space.
So he's done some rebudgeting there, because where would we be without women or space? And I obviously it's an ideal. I think space exploration is fine. But, I mean, giving him points for that, I guess.
Well,
I mean,
you've got Neil Tyson DeGrasse saying...
Neil Tyson DeGrasse,
who agrees with him on it. And Neil Tyson DeGrasse has also proclaimed that the first trillionaire on our planet is going to be the first person that can basically get mining off of asteroids.
Oh, yeah. There was I think Stephen Hawking and a trillionaire joined forces to fund...
Sounds like a movie I want to watch.
Stephen
Hawking and a trillionaire.
I can't remember exactly where I saw it, but Stephen Hawking and a super uber, one of the top point something percent of the world are going to fund a space program.
Well, you've already got it. I mean, one of the things he's touching on here is you've got Bezos and you've got
Elon
the Canadian
Musk.
And South African Musk. I like to call him Canadian.
Is he Canadian? Even though
his parents are Canadian. And
Who's Canadian?
Elon Musk.
Oh,
he's born in South Africa to Canadian parents, but he's went to university in Canada when I was going there.
What?
We didn't know
each
other. God, I wish we would have.
Yeah.
If I spent less time drinking. But you have all these guys, and I think no one really touches on this billionaire space battle between Bezos and Musk, between getting the rockets up there. And that is pretty exciting. I mean, I'm a geek in terms of getting into space. I love going there. I'm a Star Trek fan who thinks that we should live that way anyway. No money, just everyone's taken care of. But it's taken baby steps to get there.
Yeah. But it was always going to be private enterprise. It was private enterprise that drove the British Empire. It's going to be private enterprise that drives space exploration. There's no problem with that.
I'm excited about that in terms of, I mean, he's done a lot of other things. And obviously, then he's wrestling CNN in a video, which we've talked about. I mean, that was when he faced another billionaire battle was when he faced off Vince McMahon.
Yeah, and he took him down.
And he's actually one of the few people that Trump follows on Twitter is Vince McMahon as well.
Yeah, they're
old friends.
Yeah.
But, is it childish? Because, it's almost with Trump, but sometimes he takes these big steps like this National Space Council. And then you're just like, why the hell are you doing that, man? Because it's like you're stirring up the pot,
Because his base may be interested in space or may not, but they're interested in him continuing this narrative that the media is out to get him.
Mm.
And that just distracts things from the rest of his big agenda, which isn't moving anywhere. Obamacare repeal is stalled. I still think they might get it through. Other things, the wall, not happening. ISIS, not defeated yet. They're supposed to be gone about 9 days.
Well, ISIS is getting, it's getting very close to it now.
Yeah, but they were supposed to be gone
in 30
days.
But they're just going to evolve into something
They were going to be gone in 30 days.
Yeah, they're just going to evolve into something else without
proper powers
that be. That's why we're seeing more attacks in London and in the West. But so I think that, he's got to continue to feed his beast, because if he loses the base, he'll lose the House Republicans, and then he really is in trouble.
Yeah.
So he has to keep feeding them these things and this narrative that gets
them excited. Well, something Bill Maher was actually saying the other night was that... And it's an interesting, and that if he does hold on to power and say he does solidify, he's got the judges, he's got it, he's on his way to basically securing his next presidency.
The most dangerous thing he could do, I think, is to start work. If he offers enough reform of Obamacare and not trying to get rid of it, that will bring enough Democrats on side, because Democrats' weakness is that they actually want to govern. And he can tap into that. That's what George W. Bush did to them, and other Republicans have done to them in the past. Reagan did it. And they will want to fix Obamacare. And then if he does that, then you start to realize, holy shit, this guy could be there for 8 years.
Mm. If he starts another war, he definitely could be.
The fact that he tapped so far to the right so early, I think someday he may realize that was a mistake. If he had grown his base a tiny bit, he didn't have to go all the way. He's never going to get the New York liberal, Democrats and that kind of thing. But the
centrist kind of critical,
the middle of America
Hillary
would have gone with him.
So I think that's the thing, that he's got his solid base now, of the solid sort of base of people. But the only way he's actually going to grow is if he expands that base. If he finds this new group of voters, whether it's the left, whether it's people, if it's the Patriots, where he goes to war and does something like that, that's always good for your presidency, which is shitty for the rest of us.
Yeah.
And the people who have to die, obviously. But, 4 more years for him. So I guess it's sort of, and you talk about this sort of press, the whole sort of press that he's doing, because it's almost like when he said he was going to drain the swamp, and then it's basically put a target on his head, because then it's like, I'm going to take you all on, It's like walking into a room, spinning everyone's face, and then going, okay, let's do this.
But if you look at it neutrally, when you look at the drain the swamp, that's just talking points, because look at the people in his administration.
Yeah.
They're from the swamp. He said he was going to drain. So, the thing is, the narrative of his Twitter feed and Fox News and everything else, people don't see that if that's where they're getting their news. And they don't believe the fake news, because he's punching the fake news out in his Twitter feed.
Well, he is punching the fake news out. And so we were talking about that sort of Morning Joe. I don't watch any of that MSNBC.
Yeah, I didn't see that. I tried to look it up, that clip.
So, the original thing he said, because apparently...
Who's Mika?
Mika Brezhnevnik. I don't know. I don't watch the... she's on MSNBC. Let's see her name here. It is...
it's not easy to say.
Can I read it?
Brzezinski?
I'm good at this.
It's got a pizza stain by it.
Her father was a diplomat.
Father was a diplomat.
Is that
the whole thing
R?
Is, yeah, Brzezinski?
Brzezinski.
So what happened, I guess, is, he heard that they were making fun of him. So then he goes on. I hear poorly rated Morning Joe speaks badly. Don't watch anymore. Then how come IQ Crazy Mika along with Psycho Joe came to Mar-a-Lago 3 nights in a row around New Year's Eve and insisted on joining me? She was bleeding badly from a facelift. I said no. So then they're all sort of countering it. But from what I'm gathering, that he's a friend with that. They used to be friends.
Yeah.
And apparently.
Oh, he used to be friends with everyone.
But
all
his friends, as soon as he became president, then they say something.
Well, Joe and Mike at the show start, because Joe's, he's a former House Republican, and she's the liberal one. So it was that kind of pairing, liberal and conservative. They have since fallen in love. Cheated allegedly on their spouses and have gotten engaged. So it's a love story. But they had Trump on a lot in the beginning when he was just a candidate and seemed to give him some legitimacy. It was the same kind of thing that Jimmy Kimmel did when he ruffled Trump's hair and all that kind of cutesy stuff, because isn't Trump adorable and helps my ratings. But then as they saw Trump, this is what they've said since then, they saw Trump start to become slightly unhinged.
Yeah.
And they started to pull back as they realized this was happening. And they started to criticize him and challenge him the way real Republicans should have done when he said some of the things that he did, the Muslim ban and all that. And that's when Trump turned on them. But then what triggered this was that she did, and this is, it's hack now. It's like in comedy. Can't talk about the hands anymore.
No.
It's such an easy go-to. So many comics, they talk about Trump, don't talk about the tiny hands. She did a crack at his tiny hands last week, and that's what flipped him out. And that's what started this whole Twitter war.
So I've seen another thing that said that the reason also part of it was is that Greta Van Susteren, who is a friend of his, was fired from MSNBC. And these two had something to do with it or involved in it. And as a result of it, he went on the offensive against them because she was gone the next day. And so she was gone on Thursday and he just tore off.
And he has tweeted about her getting fired as well.
Yeah, he's tweeted about her getting fired. So his whole thing is it's like Trump. And as we talk about him and his like the swamp, his people he have, his inner circle is mostly his family, though. It's his sons.
Which is weird.
It's like it's a business dynasty. Thing. He doesn't trust anyone, and he wants to keep everyone, you know, keep everyone close. So it's sort of like if you attack anyone in his family, you go after him. It's like the mob. He'll fuck you up.
Yeah.
I don't get that because I mean my family. I mean I love my family, but I wouldn't go into business with them.
I could understand going after any of the adult Trump children individually because, like, Kushner is worthy of critique, and so is Ivanka. Like Ivanka's products that she places, like sometimes it's inappropriate. Some of the places are to place her products and stuff, or some of his son's business dealings, their individual business dealings or anything. Like that's completely set. But like some people, during the Twitter tirades in various points, made fun of Little Baron, and nobody likes his dad. Yeah. Everybody, some people are like vitriolically going after his dad and his mom, and he's just some 11-year-old kid. Like I just want to sit in my room and play with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like I think Trump is a little bit defensive of in that regard of just like people going after his family to go after his family, but I think it's maybe he's incapable of separating the line between actually critiquing the adult Trump children's business ventures with personal attacks against his family and everything.
Well, okay, so regardless of whether it's an attack on the family, which, you know, well, obviously Barron is off limits, the adults are adults, they're fine. But in this case, whether it was because he didn't like somebody making fun of his hands or he didn't like his friend getting fired, he's the president of the goddamn United States of America. Everybody's going to hit you for criticism. You know, grow a pair and govern the country. Act like the head of state. Imagine in this country if the queen got upset. You know, it's the same figure. So the queen starts putting out videos of her. I mean, you know, pardon me.
Oh, my God. Russell Howard did an amazing bit about, like, what the queen's like at home.
Mm.
Just like he said, like, if suddenly, like, heads of state were allowed to be gay, all of a sudden she's just like, this is Shamiqua. She's my main bitch. It's just, if the queen went absolutely.
You're nuts. Right, though. I mean, the president should not be going after. I mean, his whole thing, and I think from a Republican point of view, you're watching him get some momentum going. You're watching him starting to build it, and then you go, God, stop with this. Like, it's distractions. They're distractions that he is reactive to. That his personality should, you know, there's a lot of people making fun of him.
If he
just says watch late night news, but why turn against them?
If he'd use the power of his connection with common people who identify with this man who at best is, you know, a billionaire or a millionaire or owes at least a billion rubles, whatever it is, he connects with people on a level that is remarkable. And if he used that power effectively, he could get the entire Republican agenda done.
Mm.
You know, he could bring people on or bring in some Democrats and have that normal governance. But he doesn't seem interested in that. I don't know if it's because he never wanted the job. I don't know if it's because he's obsessed with just building up his fortune or if it's because he's truly unhinged. But I don't see, unless your goal is utter disruption, which some of his supporters want that, how is he winning?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very difficult thing when you have all these steps sort of going forward where you seem to be moving and then you just start reacting to all these sort of petulant little things that people throw out. You know, I've talked about it on another episode that, you know, one of his best guys that he has is Mark Burnett behind him, who's possibly one of the most successful television producers.
Mm.
So you have to wonder how much of this is being orchestrated by Burnett and how much advice he's doing to say to react to certain things or that he's building this almost like an episodic TV series that sort of leads to the end of the season that at end of season one, he gets rehired for season two, you know?
Or goes off in the spinoff and just like him in a farm in Alaska. I'd like to see. I mean, that would be more fun.
Maybe Trump in a farm in Alaska.
Yeah, there's a reality show like House Swap, you know, like where you take the person, the rich person, and put them in the poor family. Maybe we could do that with Obama again or someone else. I don't know.
Well, he's got.
Trudeau.
I mean,
we could have Trudeau for a while.
Oh, we're not going to put that meathead anywhere. Don't get me started on that.
I grow the best
Trudeau.
Cabbages.
He's great. Too bad he doesn't do anything about all our dying natives. But
who? What?
Trudeau. Just Trudeau. We're not.
Oh God.
I don't.
Yeah, don't get me started.
He's so beautiful, though.
I know, it's great. It's too bad
like
he just doesn't do anything he says he's going to do in life.
He's like the human embodiment of Bambi. Wow. I just want to lick him. Sorry.
So imagine, though, let's put it this way, though. Okay, let me put it this way. If I were to say that about a female leader and I disregarded anything she did and I focused on her tits, what would you say?
I mean, it depends on how.
Yeah, give us a real life
so
example.
So the thing is, a lot of people can say how great he is, but if he's failing as a leader, it doesn't matter what his
haircut's
like.
I know there's a lot of critiques of Trudeau. What he got in on was people's disillusionment with the powers that be, kind of similarly to Trump.
No, he's got in because he's a good-looking kid, and his dad was a prime minister. And
oh, okay.
Yeah, worked for George W.
Patriots.
Yeah. I mean, George W. is good-looking.
He's all right, isn't he?
Is he?
I like him now.
I mean,
George W. is funny now. Now that he's out, he's just like this old.
Painting his little pictures of dogs
man who
and stuff.
Have you seen George W.? George W. Have you seen his paintings?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
And when he's like cuddling with Michelle, that photo's like, that's broken lots of hearts.
Like, I could just tell that, like, it took all his effort to paint that painting, and it's just like, this bear is just like,
He's
I would do that. Great presidency. I'm sure that's what he. He's trying to do that in office as well. I mean, we've got because you look at we're talking about other world leaders as well. And when he's coming to the G20 this week, there's going to be he's calling a lot of people, but he has worked well like Modi of India, in South Korea. He's developing these relations with people.
He's going to get along well with Modi because Modi is horribly anti-Islam as well. So they've got that in common. They're both happy to, get rid of all the Muslims that they can. So they've got that in common. So that's a plus.
So what they have in common is a Muslim cleansing is what
you're
basically saying.
Yes, that is exactly what they have in common. That's partly what's happening in India right now. So
okay, so now he's got Putin coming up. So what do we think is going to happen here? Because this is the, have they met? Have they not met? What's going to go down in this meeting? Because there's a lot of things that have not been discussed yet.
They elope to Syria? I don't know. I'm just hoping they just, so what, if it's not a money thing, why? Because Trump has bizarrely defended him. You cannot say that he hasn't. I mean, for a president of the United States to say on national television, which he did, well, you're saying Putin's a killer. Hey, we've done things wrong, too. No president has ever shrugged his shoulders and said, we're just as bad as another country who would consider bad. So why is he so attracted? Is it the totalitarian thing?
I don't think it's necessarily a negative thing to want to regain relations with Russia. Because, I mean, Russia's political stance in a lot of the world is quite negative. But the two main focal points in world politics are Russia and the United States, the two powers that be, obviously Russia, Europe, and the United States. And to have one of those powers quite disjointed from the other ones is, I don't know. I think it doesn't make sense that we should be at odds with each other. However, Russia's political involvement and its disregard for sovereign soil, such as Crimea, and these different involvements that it has, and its unsavory attachments to people like Assad in Syria and everything, that makes it unattractive to even associate with them. But again, we said the United States every 20 minutes had a drone strike under Obama at one point. So for us to act like we've never done anything wrong.
No.
That like we sold the arms to Saudi Arabia that has now made what percentage of Yemeni that are now homeless? Like that percentage of Yemeni are now homeless because of American weapons that were put in the hands of Saudi sympathizers. We did that. We sold those weapons. That is our country, that is our responsibility, and nobody's talking about that because it's all Russia. We stole Hawaii from the native Hawaiians. We took the queen. We took a sovereign queen out of her seat, lifted her up for sugarcane.
Yeah, but have you seen the beaches? I mean, come on.
Exactly.
I
but
mean,
you know what I mean? Like,
how would you not want to do that?
We are not a spotless lamb by any means.
No, of course not. No, any country.
Got Russia, though, too. And I mean, Russia, you've got, and as I said, he probably respects the fact that this totalitarian, pushed out chess guy is, and Trump's in love with strong leaders.
Yeah.
Trump's in love with himself.
But as we sort of reach this point, there's that basis of, do you have, obviously there's, you want to be nice and diplomatic, but when you do that, in what they've done with Crimea and what's happened in Ukraine.
And his relationship to Assad.
How do you set that up in a strong meeting to go, look, hey, good to meet you, that's good, but yeah, we're close, really close to some land you took of a free people.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, any other previous president has challenged Russia on all of those things, plus gay rights, plus freedom of the press in their country. Mm. How can Trump criticize Putin's approach with the press in Russia when he's tweeting videos showing himself knocking out a member, quote unquote, of the press. I mean, that's, you can't, you've delegitimize the things that America is, whether or not it's true or not, America is supposed to be standing for something, you know, shining light on the sea, supposed to be a beacon of freedom of the press, freedom of speech. Mm. How can we represent that if our president is physically manifesting himself attacking the free press?
And I think the same time that he tweeted that.
He posted videos of him attacking press.
Yeah. Oh. Have you not seen the tweet?
There was the one, it was the one of the when he was in WrestleMania, and they just covered, someone else, it was a Trump supporter, covered the person's face with a CNN logo.
Yeah.
So that, it was just him beating up. It was an old thing from wrestling, WWFE.
Yeah.
And he just, someone just edited it with the CNN logo on the person's face. So it looks like he's actually beating up CNN. But at the same time that that was tweeted out, Putin at the same time tweeted his, where he was sitting with Henry Kissinger, who Kissinger always maintained that no matter what was going on with Russia and America, that we kept a balanced dialogue and we kept a balanced about the whole world. So yeah, it's sort of a nice sort of juxtaposition where Putin's almost sort of sending a dig. It's like, you beat up the press, I'm going to try to work with Kissinger.
Oh, yeah. Putin's winning this game. I mean, whatever game is being played, and I don't know if we'll know for 20 years what the hell is going on. Yeah. But Putin has played us like a fiddle.
But Putin as well, I mean, as well as he's strong, and a Russia, you know, they're still suffering under the sanctions. You still have a country that economically is collapsing, where the structure of Russia itself, where you have so much, you know, they're trying to work with the Chinese again on so many things, but every time they seem to try to work with China, everything fails because you've got, you know, Chinese have got a lot of business, a lot of energy running, and then they run into Russian red tape, and you run into the Russian political system.
Yeah.
So things are, you're talking corruption and things not getting done.
Mm. Well, is Russia even a political system, or is it just, it's just a mob rule, isn't it? I mean, it's a mafia.
It's different everywhere. You know, Vladivostok is different than St. Petersburg, is different than Moscow, is different. You know, every area, every local government seems to be corrupt in its own way. And so, I mean, you sort of go do, you know, it's nice to have them as an ally, but are we, should we be helping them?
I think we are helping them. I mean, Trump seems to be doing everything he can to make America look, have less and less standing around the world for the good things that America's meant to represent. Yes, we do bad things at the same time. But as the leader of the free world, that they've had that mantle for a long time, for better or worse, we're capitulating that. We're stepping away from that.
I mean, I think, you know, I don't know what you guys think, but when they came into Ukraine and you sort of take over, there's obviously different sides, but you militarily went into a foreign country, took the land, denied it at first, and then they're like, well, you're not getting it back. So first you said, we had nothing to do with us, those are rebels, but now we have it, we're keeping it.
They're probably thinking, well, it works for Israel. Why can't we do it?
What I understood happened in Ukraine was that, obviously, in the eastern part of Ukraine, there's a large native Russian-speaking community. Their language is Russian, which Russian and Ukraine, though, are both Slavic languages. They're completely different, absolutely 100% different. Ukrainian is actually much more closer to Polish than it is to Russian. And so this eastern part, I think, felt alienated from Kiev. Via different legislations on this side of the country. And I think it came to one point that Ukraine, the government of Ukraine, made Ukrainian, obviously, the national language of Ukraine, but then took away Russian from one of the national languages of Ukraine. And this kind of sparked the idea in the East that I might be wrong, but this is what I was told by a friend who was there during this time that is going on, and he was living in Poland during the Crimea crisis. That this kind of, you know, alienation of the East is what set a lot of people who kind of identified as Russian anyway to be just like, well, we're Russian now, screw those guys. Like, so they...
Well, I mean, we have people that don't...
And Russia capitalized on that. Russia was just like, you're Russian, you say. Well, how about, you know what I mean? And they...
We have parts of Canada that are French-speaking, and that they may not like it, but if France came in to try to invade,
exactly.
You know, we'd be a little pissed off. Obviously, the other thing that's big about that area of the world is it's perfect for a pipeline, and there's a perfect pipeline that can go right through there. But is it ever going to get back? Is it one of those things where it's done? It's theirs now. No one's going to do anything about it.
Not with Trump as president. He's not going to push them to do anything to change it. So, I mean, I guess for now it's a stalemate for the, you know, for, you know, it could become one of those things. I mean, they still, Cyprus is still divided, for Christ's sake.
Yeah.
And that's been going on since, you don't even know how long that's been happening. So, yeah, I mean, these things don't solve themselves very quickly. And
there's
until
so much
Putin's gone,
he's
not, you know,
things.
It's not going to...
And it's, well, it's one of those things, too, it's not our business. I mean, obviously, when people are saying, hey, help us, and the world has to listen to people saying, help us. But, and we've heard people in Syria say, help us as well. And what have we done?
Well, I mean, yeah, we're in a period that seems to be a retrenchment to nationalism and nationalist things are, you know, America first and Britain first in a way with all
the
different
shocking.
Connotations
I did a,
here.
I did a charity show to raise money for a charity that just feeds different Syrian families, right? And so we had me, we had a girl from Kent, we had a Syrian comic, we were all doing the show. And at the end, I kind of improvised on this little spiel about the refugee crisis, because I this is where my tattoo comes from. My tattoo is from Bosnia, which is obviously a country of majority Muslims. And I went there, and I lived there and was taken care of by these people. And I hear so many stories about, obviously, people going as refugees into Europe, into different parts of the world, and then coming back into Bosnia. Very few people came back, because after the war, there was very little left. But when Bosnians left for persecution into the rest of the world, we opened them with open arms. Come. Why? Because they speak a language that kind of sounds like something we might have heard before.
Yeah.
They speak Bosnian, which kind of sounds like Czech, they're white and they speak a language that's familiar to us, that isn't like, that hasn't, since 2001, hasn't had a propaganda campaign against anyone who speaks it. And this is what's happening in Syria. It's like these people, we share so much history with Assyria, with the Fertile Crescent, with this corner of the world. We share so much shared history over the last 2,000 years. And people are othering them. They've been, the Bush administration was othering them. The media and everything was othering, trying to get us to keep supporting this conflict over there and the our foreign interests over there, these private interests. And now you have a bunch of people doing exactly the same thing that happened in 93, 94 with Bosnia coming over. Now they're trying to come over. They're being attacked by their own leader. There's a man in power who attacks hospitals because he can. Not any strategic, just because he can, who blocks off, I think it was it Aleppo that he blocked off and kept from UN involvement. People were eating spices. People were eating salt and pepper to survive. People were dying by the hundreds per day. And they're scratching at the door of Western society like, please, can we live? And because they speak Arabic, they're just like, oh, sorry. You know what I mean?
But a lot of this region, though, and it's a bigger thing. It's the Iranians, it's the Qatarians, it's the Saudis. It's a lot of things that involved in Syria that the world powers seem to be getting involved in as well. But it seemed to be a local crisis. They just tapped their big buddies and said, hey, can you help us with this? Then it spiraled out of control.
Yeah, I mean, Syria was always held together by a thread and by the Assad family. Yeah. And, you know, it's more important to the region because there's Russian bases there. There's the only country. They have bases outside of the Russian Federation. So that raises the stakes for Russia to get involved. A lack of American leadership and a lack of American will for the people. I mean, I'm one of the few people that thought we should have been harder on Assad from the beginning. And when the U.S. and the U.K. backed off because the left convinced themselves it was going to be Iraq all over again, I think we should have done more. Would it be easy? Would it have been clean? Would it not have been another, you know, Libyan quagmire? Maybe, but I think that having been to Syria through one of my old jobs years ago, and you know, been there when people would be hushed tones, like at a restaurant, because they couldn't criticize the regime in public, because you don't know if the table next to you is a spy listening to you.
Yeah.
It was like that.
Yeah,
And people lived in, you know, in fear. So,
like Hollywood in the 50s?
Yeah, exactly. And, lots of other, but I think that, it's ridiculously complicated because of the geopolitics. The demonization of Arab peoples lately, I think that, you know, we didn't see that after 9/11 to the same degree that we're seeing that in America now. I think it's just because it's played into a Trump agenda and a Republican agenda to create this fear and this, you know, I mean, after 9/11, George W. Bush, one of the probably best things he did was he said that, you know, Islam is not our enemy. But, you know, Trump has taken the exact opposite of that. And that's what's led to a lot of this fear, I think.
Just because Bush really had going for him is though he's a bit of an impotent leader and mostly driven by Cheney.
I don't think he ever really wanted to be there.
No, Cheney was just like, we're doing this. And he's like, okay.
I don't want to be president, daddy.
just give me the reins.
But, I mean, Assad, I mean, he was welcoming into Britain. I mean, Trump is supposed to be here in the next couple of weeks, and everyone's planning these protests, but Assad visited here. No one protested that. And was anyone protesting when Gaddafi was here?
Well, he might have been coming, because I think, is he an osteopath or something? He's a trained doctor and was trained in Britain.
Assad.
So maybe, so maybe he was just coming to, you know, do his...
collect some bones.
Well, I think he still has a GP office here.
I think he has plenty.
Here,
yeah,
so.
I'm sure.
Lining the streets of Syria.
He's just doing his local surgery.
I'm sure the doctoring was more for let me do this one, doctor. I'll take care of the torture.
And his wife is British, so, you know, he can't be.
But, I mean, Trump, he's a business owner here, so he wants to go to his golf course and see his golf course.
Yeah, I know. That's going to be fun.
But is it a bit over the top? I mean, when people in Britain who are just like, we're all going to show him. I mean... you're going to cause chaos in the streets. You're going to throw stuff, get angry. And it's not going to do anything except make Britain look like an idiot and people not want to come here.
There's so much. Like, I see so much. This is what really bothers me about politics to say. You either have the super, super right, which is what got Trump into power. Then you have the super, super left, which burns down buildings because they're pissed off. You know, like, it's just, it's absurd to me because I'm trying to write about this in a show because people wonder, like, how could Trump get into power? Just how? It's just like, you don't know small town America. You don't understand these people. It's like, people in a small town, they're scared that their guns are going to get taken away. They live in the country, you know. So this mentality is like, it's us versus them, is just as strong on that side as it. You know what I mean? It's just it's horrific. If your values cause you to harm or damage things, what values do you have?
Exactly. It's the hyperbole of each side. And I think that's when you see all these people, and it's sort of one of the Guardian writers was like, he's coming, just follow me and we'll get him. It's like, so it's a witch hunt. No wonder he doesn't want to come here.
No,
and
nothing.
How, what does that say about democracy?
Yeah.
I think it says, oh no, I think we have a freedom. I think, again, I think the protests are fine if he comes. I think that, you know, as long as they're done, obviously, you know, without burning any buildings down, and it's showing that freedom of expression that he can't do in Russia, that he wants to stop in the United States, in other countries, in Turkey. That's what makes that madness, that mess, that insanity that is our Western democracies.
Yeah.
I embrace that. Obviously, don't hurt anyone. Peaceful protesting. If they can pull that off and embarrass the man, brilliant. Do it.
Yeah. Tell me how he's going to get embarrassed, because he only watches cable news and he won't watch British news. So
he will be about just the same way that he was tweeting and talking for days about the size of his inauguration. This stuff gets to him.
Did you see the picture of Gays for Trump? The rally. Oh my God! They held a Gays for Trump rally, I think, on Pride Week. Three whole people showed up.
Wow.
Like, in a massive field, just three people standing there, just like, it's amazing. Just the best thing I've ever seen.
Angry gaze for Trump. The look, you just crossed your arms like,
yeah. It was amazing. And they
all
just,
gay for Trump, and it makes me angry. No one will sleep with me, because all the other gays are against him. I just wanted to make love.
But wouldn't it be more effective for no one to show up? Like, if they really wanted to make their point, and there's nobody there.
No, but I'm sure that those people were actually for Trump, and I'm sure some of them were actually staff.
I'm just talking about the people protesting Trump. I'm just wondering, it's like, if it'd be more effective, you got all these Guardian people that are all like, oh, we're going to get him.
Yeah,
we'll
it's just going to be fire for his campaign against the fake news. It's like people coming and saying just like, this is, look what they're doing. They don't like the truth. They hate me because I'm right. This is me. I'm terrific. You know, he's just going to use that as fodder.
I think that. Yeah, I think it has an impact and it bugs him, and that's why he's going to do it in secret. He can't get the state visit that he wants and the validation he wants. He's all about ego validation. That's why he's already doing campaign rallies, that, and it makes a lot of money for his businesses. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, all of that feeds that side of things, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it. What does it accomplish? Other than annoy him, I don't know. Maybe it invigorates. I mean, the thing that has to happen for this is that people have to get engaged, keep excited, and vote next time.
Of course.
Your vote matters. And that's why Trump won, is because people either thought their vote didn't matter or they voted for a third party, which is the stupidest fucking thing you can do in the United States. I'm sorry, it's just pointless. Anybody that voted for Jill Stein is a moron. So, you know, that's what makes a difference. And if that gets people excited, then that's what they need to do.
Unfortunately, though, the thing is, when you do something like that and you put on a mass protest, for me, the bugbear is this city has been through a lot in the past couple months. And to put the security people, the police, everyone out so that they have to be worried about their safety for this thing, because, you know, he comes in a state visit and it's quiet. But you guys, if people want to start this rabble rousers and start these protests and anti-Trump and throwing things, think about all the police officers
to assume a peaceful protest in a democracy is not rabble rousing. That is our
when
right.
Someone says we're going to get them, follow me. That's to me. That's yeah. That's
well,
setting
that, obviously that's not the appropriate kind of language. If we're going to stand and have a peaceful protest, you know, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King style,
exactly.
That sort of, the later Mandela
that's,
years.
That's not what's
that
going to happen. I mean, let's be honest.
No, but,
that,
but
that
I mean,
is
but,
not
but,
what's
but I'm
happen.
Not going to advocate for that. So what yeah. I'm going to say, if you can come out and have that peaceful, have it be a silent protest.
Exactly.
People, you know, there's ways to do it, obviously, which will have more impact. And would, but to say yes, adopting the language that we're criticizing him for using is not the way forward. So I would not support that.
Inciting, I think, is always a damaging thing.
Yes.
You know, and particularly when someone we're someone who gets responds to that. It's only going to make things worse, and it just makes worse for everyone who lives here. You know, particularly since there's a lot of people who come around. And if you've got a problem with his golf course, don't go to his golf course. You got a problem with him, don't buy his things. But at the same time, you know, it's you're just making misery worse. And it's got a lot of times these people are professional protesters. You know, these people that come
in. I think that's a bit of a myth. I don't think there's professional protesters. I've never met anyone who on their business card said protester.
No, of course they don't. But these are sort of activists. And I've been to some of these rallies before. And you just meet people like, yeah, we're going to fuck stuff up. And you see people changing. It's like, Jesus, you know, it should be about democracy. It should be about influencing opinion and hopefully, you know, making everything better for everyone. Not about throwing an incendiary.
Yeah. But how many of 100,000 people that protest, how many of them are these?
Just takes one.
Well, yeah, of
it
course
takes
it does.
An,
but,
it takes
but that
a number
that shouldn't
to
take
spark
away the rest.
Up,
it shouldn't
the,
take away from
the rights of those 95,000 people.
No, exactly. So then we got Trump going to Asia as well after that. And this whole thing, I mean, you know, the Chinese islands, those that they've sort of built up and said, oh, these are ours. And the Philippines say they're theirs too, and a few other people. I mean, America has been sailing boats, like destroyers around them. Is this provocation or is this needed?
I think that, I mean, I can see that is probably, I would imagine Trump doesn't even know it's happening because he stepped away from some, he's already said to Mattis, who's defense secretary, that he can set the troop levels, which is an incredible abdication of presidential power. And so I think they're running the show as they would, like, so there's, you know, there's Trump's governance and then there's the real governance that's happening. And they clash sometimes, or if Trump notices. So this is probably a normal, because those islands are illegal according to international law. So the U.S. is asserting its right and flexing muscles there. And that's what, unfortunately, I think some of that has to happen because we don't all get along.
And
so
we're obviously the main power.
Whether Trump knows what's happening there or whether he will like it, because he probably wants to, he wants to get along with the Chinese. I think he said they're friends because they had dinner together.
And he had Xi there there when he attacked that bunker in Syria. They were sitting at Mar-a-Lago. It was like, watch this. Watch what I'm about to do.
But the other side, you know, when he's getting tough with China or getting tough with North Korea, he saw how his ratings went up when he bombed Syria. And so that's an attract. There's some of that attraction there to him. So
was it Syria or was it Afghanistan that he bombed? The mother of all bombs.
That was
a different one. The mother of all bombs. That was just a test it because he wanted to use something big.
And well, that was during the cake. The bomb during the cake. The Afghanistan bomb during the cake.
Syria
is when he was at Mar-a-Lago, when he had the Chinese president there.
Okay.
And it was basically, he told them, which is unprecedented, which was took a lot of balls to be able to say, look, I'm about to attack these guys. And you get China going, okay. And then the Chinese leader going, and he spelled it out, and he's like, well, if you got to do it, sounds good.
Yeah.
Boom.
But unfortunately, what he also did was he called the Russians first so they could clear all their planes out of the airport.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Well,
it was nice for him to, you know.
Look.
I think if you're going to bomb somebody, the least you can do. I mean, that's what the IRA used to do, right? Yeah. They'd call ahead of time. Yeah, that's polite.
Well, it's polite enough, too, because the whole thing that starts wars is those accidents. You know, and that's all we need is an accident in Syria where something gets hit. You know, Russia hits America. America hits Russia. Those are the kind of things that sort of go. I mean, Turkey shot down the Russian plane, you know, I personally was like, fuck this. Those are the things that start off. Those are the Gabriel Princip moments that kick off and start the events going.
I don't know. I didn't think all my predictions have been wrong for the last 5 years, but I still think it's pretty unlikely that we're going to go to war with Russia anytime soon.
I think it's unlikely we go
we'll
to
have
war.
Proxy wars, but those are
fun. Of course. The proxy wars, but it's war is obviously good. It's just a matter of who's going to be the next target for the economy. You know, it better not be Canada. Please don't attack us.
Because
I don't think Canada's ever started an international war ever since its independence?
We have been peacekeepers. We've stepped into things like Cyprus and things like that.
Not instigated.
No, we've jumped in sometimes for war.
You guys were in World War I and II, weren't you?
We were in way before you were.
What's great about that is I didn't know that World War I started before 1917 until I was a teenager because of the way American history books are written. I didn't even know Canada existed until I was older as well, because the map we had in my elementary school classroom had the continent of the United States, then and then this island called Alaska, and then there's just blue. Blue there. I was like, oh, that's what. And I lived in Washington State.
Just an under construction sign.
Yeah. 100 miles south of the border.
My God.
It's just Victoria Island. What's that?
Mm. I've never actually even been to Canada.
Even though you're like
16 hours drive away,
But so you're like in between, like getting over.
Wait, so
to
I
the
mean,
mainland.
Like Michigan, Alaska's. It takes 16 hours in Alaska to drive to Canada.
Depends on your region. So, like on the Panhandle, obviously it's much closer. But like my region, I'm in South Central. So here we go.
Like Los Angeles.
There, wait,
is that a gang symbol? No gang symbols. No gang symbols. South Central Alaska.
So this is what the Alaskans do. So this is where I'm from. It's like I have a tiny little peninsula here. That's my peninsula. I'm from this region. This is like the most, like 0.2% of Alaska has people on it, something like that. Half of those people live in one city. Well, like they live like 2 hours north of me, and I like and then 80% of the entire population of Alaska lives within about 100-something miles of that city. So this is where most people drive from to go to Canada. So to go to Canada, we go 11 hours Fairbanks. Through the Alcan and then into Yukon. That's 16 fucking hours.
And then that part of Canada, there's nothing there anyway. So
that even used to be Alaska. British Columbia. Yeah.
But I mean, what's there?
British Columbia.
Name one town in northern British Columbia.
Quesnel, okay. Prince Rupert.
I just discovered something
British Columbia. There are literally a thing called sea wolves.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that? That there's actually a pack of wolves that swim and are genetically dissimilar to their landlocked counterparts. Did you know that?
No. Are they like sea lions?
No. They're actual physical wolves.
Sea owls.
Happenstance to what happened with the Galapagos iguanas. So they were at one point land iguanas, that the ones who had this ability to go and stop their heartbeat for about 15 minutes and swim around and hold their breath, those are the ones that survived. Similar thing to the wolves. There's a group. You knew this.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mr. Canadian over here.
I wrote on trivia shows.
We also
have alcoholics that are also potheads. They can do both.
Yeah.
And that's crazy.
Those are my discipline.
I know. So we'll start wrapping this up soon. I want to ask you guys, if you were to give sort of Trump, I'm going to ask a grade, like a grade from A to F. So far, how's he doing?
Well, it depends on whose side of the fence you're on. His supporters think he's doing.
I'd say, though.
I think it matters because I think what matters is what his supporters think. That's what's going to keep this.
You
going.
Are going to be a politician. Go ahead.
Yeah, and that's what I believe today. what we see here, I'd say they give him a B. They want him to stop tweeting. I obviously think. I don't know. I don't know whether this is planned or if it's just chaos rules.
Mm.
And that I can't grade. You can't grade chaos. It's just it's insanity.
My teacher said the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. And look where you are today.
Yeah, I know.
Look at
hosting a podcast.
Look at yourself.
Chelsea, what do you think?
Give him a C.
A C?
Yeah.
He's way below. That's an average grade. So what does that put him on par with? That puts him on par with.
First year, it's a first year. First year presidents, it's usually the worst year anyway, right?
By this point,
like a C minus.
Now because Eric's jumping all over you.
No, like, you know what I mean? Like it's like the points that we pointed out about some of the things that he's trying to pass that are not necessarily heinous, and then there's obviously the tweeting and the nefarious relations abroad. He's just on the lesser end of acceptable.
What's the matter is what he thinks he's doing, and he thinks he's worth billions.
Okay, let me ask you this then. How about this? It's a percentage question. What are the percentage chances of Donald Trump being reelected?
Oh, God. Depends on who he's running against. If Bernie Sanders runs, I think...
Bernie will probably be dead by then. And he's pretty... How old would Bernie be in 4 years?
403.
Yeah. That's... That's Yoda years.
He's Gandalf. It's
it doesn't matter.
He does not
I'll
age.
Be there.
He only
fighting
gets
against
wiser.
The billionaires and the millionaires from the grave.
Yeah. He'll be there.
Him and Jeremy Corbyn.
If it's Dwayne Johnson, Trump doesn't have a chance.
No, Dwayne Johnson wouldn't run for the Democrats. Come on. He's Republican.
Is he?
Well, at this stage, what do the Republicans mean anymore? Tom Hanks. Tom Hanks could run. He's talked about running. They joked about it on Saturday Night Live anyway.
Did you?
I think okay. Tom could. Tom, at this stage, Tom
I
could
think
run.
The Christians what if would get was, upset that he didn't say under
who,
God.
Yeah, it matters who runs against him.
Franken?
Obviously.
You think Franken could take him?
I don't know anymore.
So you do you think it's a high percentage of him being reelected?
I think it's a low percentage of him being elected because I think that, I think... You know, if there's any normalcy in politics left, he'll lose the House in 2018. He'll be under an impeachment investigation. There'll be other things that come out. At some point, there'll be something where they realize he's not delivering some of his promises. I just think at some point, reality and some level of truth has to shine through. I just have to hope. God,
then we've got Pence to deal with.
Okay, so Pence, let's follow up on that one. What are the percentage of chances of him being impeached?
Ugh.
Right now, zero until 2018, then they go up significantly. I mean, to the 70s or 80s. I'd be amazed if the Democrats don't impeach him, because if they have a wave election, they will have a mandate to impeach him. And then, you know, it's civil war. So that's fine. I live here now.
Yeah.
Chelsea, what do you think? Chances of him being impeached?
I really can't say. It seems to go back and forth every week. Some new little bit of information says this, and then I'm just like, oh, yay. And then it's just like this, and it's just like, oh, fuck. Can't really say. It's just so back and forth, and there's such a media campaign on each side of just like very, very pro-Trump, very, very this, and then there's very, very anti-Trump, and it's just like, you know, the truth is somewhere in the middle, and it's very hard to look at it at a completely gray scale, no black and white, just to look at it pragmatically. So
it's really hard to peer through the shit sometimes, isn't it? Especially as the general populace, when we know that we have these only, say, five people running all the media organizations, and we get some of our information from fucking idiots on Facebook, that it's hard for us average citizens sometimes to know what's going on.
I don't go on Facebook for my news. I go to Twitter, which is the truth.
That's always the best.
That's where Donald Trump is.
I go onto Facebook for my news. No, I don't. But thanks, you guys, for joining me. Hopefully,
Thank
we had
you.
A good time. And hopefully, we'll get to see Mr. Trump when he's in town.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll see you guys on the road. Do you have lots? Are you guys doing Edinburgh this year?
Yep. Yeah. Doing Edinburgh.
I'm doing all right.
Are you doing a show?
I'm doing a show. Yeah. When's your show? Plug it.
Well, I'm just doing kind of a mild cabaret variety thing that I'm hosting. I'm not doing a solo show this year, but I'm doing cabaret show 10 to 8 at Fingers Piano Bar, which is going to be great. And then I'm actually also a part of the Comedians Theater at the Pleasance Dome.
Ooh, cool.
Super posh. So that's going to be quite fun.
And Eric, how about yourself?
I'm riding the Trump train.
Better
riding
than riding the Trump taint.
Are you really?
This tiny ass.
To make your cock look bigger, though.
Look big. That's why my wife has. Never mind. My show is Eric McElroy Tops Trump, and it's on at 3:45 every day at the Espionage.
Perfect, and we are hoping to take this show on the road up there as well, but we'll keep you informed about that. Thanks for tuning in, guys. Thanks for joining us.
Amazing. Sure.